You there, Peter?
Yes, nice to hear your voice.
Howdy, howdy.
How's it going?
I'm here with Bridge as well, I should mention.
Okay, very good.
Now, the Pope's back saying stuff again. I'm always get a little bit excited when the Pope says some stuff.
Yes. You're more impressed by sermons than I am, because it's very interesting. You know, the line of the sermon was simply, it was a sermon, and so he was just commenting on the readings where Jesus had said it's better if you cause somebody to stumble, it would be better for you to have a millstone put around your head and dropped in the depths of the sea,
Jesus,
than to be guilty of damaging the life of one of the little ones. That's pretty extreme language from Jesus.
Yeah.
And the Pope, who's certainly an able preacher, took it up and decided to point out that he thought a lot of the kind of respectable people of the church deserved to get nervous, because actually, as he said in the bit that's been much quoted, be better to be an atheist than to be one of these hypocrites in the church who are just saying one thing and doing totally the opposite.
So he's kind of saying live righteously, and then just at the end, just be real kind of thing? Is that the
point? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He says that Christianity that is not linked, belief that is not linked to sort of good behaviour is valueless. And that's a pretty standard line, actually, from Christianity. Christians seem to be less good at actually doing it than saying it, but there we are. And you see, this illustrates one of the issues with Pope Francis is that he's extremely articulate,
right,
in talking quite bluntly and quite entertainingly in a language that ordinary people can understand.
Right, right.
And I think this has been part of the great appeal, that he can talk a common vernacular, and so we can touch on things that people sit up and listen and say, goodness, can a Pope say things like that? That doesn't sound very institution building.
Right.
And I think that is his great strength. One of the problems he's got is that if you actually thought that strongly, you would think that it would follow, that the church would follow more rigorously under his leadership,
yeah,
in getting rid of the hypocrites, in dealing with some of the stuff that needs to be dealt with. And I suspect it's just an institutional inertia, which I think the Vatican's quite happy to just, you know, they just don't do anything in response to a sermon.
Oh, okay.
Except to respond and saying, well, he didn't mean.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're not about to excommunicate anybody.
It's interesting you say that, because I posted on our Facebook page, 95B from Drive with Johnny and Big Hungry, this piece that we were talking about today. And somebody's come back and said, well, you know, because I was like, oh, that's not bad that he said that, you know. But then somebody's come back and said, posted this other thing. It says, the Pope Francis has quietly reduced sanctions against a handful of pedophile priests, applying his vision of merciful church even to its worst offenders, in what the survivors of abuse and Pope's own advisors question. You know, so it's like, it's interesting.
That statement may be slightly exaggerated, but it's certainly true that the Pope had set up an advisory committee,
right,
to bring him advice on how to deal with pedophile priests, and some of the, there was a survivor placed on it, an Englishman, and he was so fed up with the inertia and the lack of action that he said so out loud,
right,
and then he was quietly dropped from the committee in its next meeting.
Oh, wow. Surely that's why he's on the committee, though.
Yeah.
Oh, well, precisely. I mean, you bring the opponent on in order that they can hold you to account and give you voice. But what I think is a feature of the Francis regime is that he's not really interested in administration matters.
Right.
And when you're not interested in administration, when you're part of an enormous administrative apparatus, then what happens is the people who are interested just get on with the work, because you're not held to account. And I think it's very clear that very traditional forces are just holding the Vatican steady and thinking, oh, well, this Pope's here for a while, but he's not forcing us to do anything.
Yeah, yeah. I find interesting the advisors part. So he would have like a crew of people that before he says anything publicly, surely it goes through their filter, right?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. No, not at all.
Oh, wow.
It is very clear that the Pope...
That's risky, isn't it?
I think Benedict would have been cautious and would have checked out things like this.
Yeah.
And so there doubtless is a kind of PR machine, even in the Vatican, though it's probably run by people who are not that good at it. but, you know, this is not unlike Trump. He just says things.
Yeah.
He just gets on the phone, tracks in a phone number, and gives somebody a call or makes a comment in the sermon. And then after the event... you notice that sometimes the Vatican issues clarificatory statements.
So it's a case of kind of staying relevant and just going, hey, look, check it out, I've got an opinion on this, and then
people
like me jump on it.
Deal with it later.
Well, yeah, well, of course, I mean, perhaps in the long term, I mean, a church is only as good as its vision. And so maybe he's lifting the vision, and it will take other people to put the performance in. But there's some very, very hard work to be done. In, for example, cleaning out the bishops who have a bad record.
Yeah.
And he's been, when it comes to new appointments, he seems to often make quite good appointments, but he is seems to be utterly reluctant to dismiss anybody. I should qualify that there are one or two examples where there's been dismissals, but in general, what you would think would follow from the reforming talk would be a purge of some high officials. I mean, for example, George Pell, this is the former cardinal from Sydney, who is in charge of the Vatican financial area, but is now facing the demand that he appear before the Royal Commission on Child Abuse because he seems to have let slip back in Australia.
Right.
Pedophile priest that he must have known about.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just played the I'm a sick man and I can't travel.
Have you watched that Spotlight movie? Sorry, not documentary. Have you seen that, Peter? It's about...
I haven't seen that, but I've read a lot of the material lying behind it.
Yeah, it's
and
it seems horrific, like the numbers.
It's very, very troubling.
Yeah.
And really, it's kind of interesting that he's allowed to use these... what seemed to me very weak excuses.
Right, right. I'm curious, actually, now we're just talking about how he can kind of say what he wants and stuff. Has there ever been a scenario where a pope's been, like, just overthrown by, like, all the other, like, under-popes kind of thing? Sorry, I've got the links.
Yes, but there certainly has been. But
okay.
We need to go back to the great division in the papacy, the so-called Babylonian captivity of the church in the 14th century.
Right.
So this was a point where in the late 14th and early 15th century, the papacy became, it really split three ways, and there were three rival popes struggling for control of the institution, sponsored by different parts of the Christian world. But it lay with the failings of a pope who was just incompetent.
Right. Yeah. Oh, thanks, Peter. It's always good to have an old chat about old mate the Pope. I always find him such a fascinating
yes.
being.
Yeah. So it's good.
We'll catch you next Monday.
I look forward to that.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much.